Welcome to the Yeshiva Shalmaila. This is David Lichtenstein. This week's program is, what would happen if Eretz Yisrael was actually more than 50% from? It's inspired, obviously, by what's going on in the government right now, trying to abolish the Supreme Court or change the Supreme Court, etc. Well, what would happen if we were 51% from? Would we have to conduct ourselves, the entire Medina, Alpitin Torah? Would Rabbi Yashiv Zecher Lebracha have to have been the Chief Justice? What would it mean to us? If somebody's caught stealing, would you need two Adim Ksherim to be able to, say, you know, to testify? Could you use a video camera? Could you use DNA? Could an Isha testify that somebody stole? Is there a concept of jail? What would you do for murderers? Would there be capital punishment? What about, you know, things like a ma'anes, a rapist, the halacha, just pays money and goes free? Would you say on kefil if he's moida, so basically a robber, a thief, you would say if he's caught, he pays. Kefil, they won't because he'll be moida. If he doesn't get caught, he keeps it. So what's to prevent somebody from robbing? There's no downside. There's no jail. There's no punishment. There's no child molestation there would be nothing for. What about electricity on Shabbos? How do you run a government on Shabbos, a police force on Shabbos, etc., etc.? So that's going to be the topic of this week's shiur. We're going to have the Av Beis Din and Reish Koil, Reb Shai Tahan. He's going to be speaking about it.
Al Pi Din Torah, it should be applied heavier. A person that's Rotzeach can't go to jail. He should get the capital punishment.
And from Eretz Yisrael, we're going to have Rabbi Yisrael Krengel from Tzomet. Tzomet is the organization. It's the one that does all the switches for the hospitals, for the army, etc. Any time you go to a hospital in Eretz Yisrael, you're using Tzomet switches to work with Grumma. So they're experts on how do we run public institutions, the halacha. And it's ungenommen. You know, most of the Paiskim in Eretz Yisrael do use Tzomet switches, etc. So he's an expert on all the Shabbos questions, how to run a country halachically on Shabbos and Yom Tov.
Metal detectors at the Kotel are Shinu Zerim, are just modulating existing current. First of all, they deactivate the sound and the lights that you would have on during the week, which is why a lot of people think they're off, but they can't be off. They need to keep the place safe. That's the whole point. You know, we have to keep everything safe.
By the way, a fascinating thing we're going to speak to Rabbi Krengel about is the Tzomet scooters. For people who have some type of ill or have a handicap, halachically they have Hechsherim, many of them. How do we use them? What's the logic to using the Tzomet scooters on Shabbos? It should be very interesting. Before we go to our shiur, I want to speak about a few of the comments we had. We spoke about the mitzvah tans, and we asked questions. How could you make it? Mitzvah tans, Shulchan Aruch, I think it's 7, Ezel Chaf Aleph or Chaf Beis, says that you don't mara chiba in public. Yeshoim Rim, and it's based on a Gemara. So we said, how do they do a mitzvah tans with a chassan and kala are dancing hand in hand? You don't see by Orthodox men and women walking hand in hand. And we had all kinds of terutzim that we were unsatisfied with the past weeks. We showed, you know, why these terutzim didn't work. But we had three or four people who answered a teretz this that we believe is the correct answer, and here's one of them.
I just wanted to comment on the question you had about the mitzvah tans. So I would just want to comment, you call it divrei chibur. Rabbim, I don't know what mitzvah tans, the one who asked this question, I don't know which mitzvah tans he saw, but most mitzvah tans that I see, and I see a lot of them, doesn't come anywhere close to like the Rechebe. You know, the Chusin and Kala are looking down and they're just going through the motion of dancing like it's a minig, but this absolutely would never be called the Rechebe. And I would say that's the way probably most of them are.
And the answer is, I've never been by a mitzvah tans, at least in decades, I don't remember. But these people who have witnessed it said, look, your facts are wrong. There is no chiba going on over there, and therefore it's mutter. I believe that to be the correct answer. Now, here's somebody, this week is Rabbi Ari Wasserman, who does always a fabulous job, and he spoke about hats. And here is a listener who commented, interesting thought.
It's regarding wearing black hats. I once heard Shane Rabbi Victor Miller said as follows, that wearing a black hat, looking like a ben Torah of wearing a black hat, is like gara from wearing tefillin.
So he says, wearing a hat is like wearing tefillin. Now, I guess that means, I just would think of this, you know, there are whole kehillas in Klal Yisrael that don't wear a hat. You know, if you go to Eretz Yisrael, you have the whole Dati Lumi, it's I don't know, it's hundreds and hundreds of thousands, all the Rav Kuknicks, etc. They don't own a hat, they never wore a hat in their life. Would we say on all of them that they're a karkafta de loy monach tefillin? And then I would ask another question. I mean, a hat is, at best, arguably is a minig. I mean, if we start taking these hanhuggis and we turn them into rice, isn't that what baltaisiv is all about? Is somebody going to say that a white shirt is now a deraisa like tefillin? Or if you're chassidish and you cut your beard, I mean, that's a no-no. Is that like not putting on tefillin anymore? Or by the Sfardim, if you stop eating kibbeh on Shabbos, which is a minig that they have, is that also tefillin? Like, where do we stop taking hanhuggis and saying, if you do this, now suddenly you're over deraisa? I mean, I had one person, he was screaming that if you eat sushi on Shabbos instead of gefilte fish, it's a kefira. I mean, is that also tefillin? Like, when do we take hanhuggis, like a white shirt, and turn them into deraisis, tefillin? I mean, why does it stop at tefillin? Is it maybe like, I don't know, Gili Arias or Avodah Zarah? Once we start taking hanhuggis and turning them to deraisis, what measuring stick do we have to decide which deraisis it is? That's, when I listened to this call, that's what came to mind. Now, here's a caller. The next caller I thought was very interesting, and I think this goes back to what's going on in Israel. Listen to the next caller.
He said James Sachs, a reform rabbi, was a Gedol Yadoi. He said that James Sachs, a reform rabbi, was a Kufin in Yiddishkeit. Is the Chosh Ramesh Gedol Yadoi?
Now, I called Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, Eichat Tzadik Levrach, an Adam Gadol. I do believe he was an Adam Gadol. Was he an Adam Gadol like Maresh Shiva, like Rav Hutter, Rav Nochem? I mean, obviously not. He was a different type of an Adam Gadol. He was the Adam Gadol who was Bekayim Adabel of the Melachim Veloy Evoish. Right? I understand that Prince Charles was very nispel from him. But, you know, you could see him online debating atheists and of the worst type successfully. And his tyrus on the parsha are actually really beautiful tyrus. So this young fellow disagrees with him and calls him a reform rabbi. Now, he had orthodox smichas. His tyrus are clearly very orthodox tyrus, I don't know. But he disagreed. I guess he trimmed his beard. He debated church leaders, whatever that may be. He was clearly more of he went to college, right? He was learned. He had a doctorate, I believe. So that makes him a reform rabbi. What is this young man? He's from the woke generation. What is the woke generation? If I disagree with you, you're a kaifer and you don't matter anymore. Right? That's what the woke generation believes. The banishment of anybody who doesn't agree with us. Why did I play it? What's going on in Israel right now is a sad commentary. And it's almost like the story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza, what the Arabic missiles can't do, Machlekes among the Eden can't do. You have three parties. You have the Supreme Court, incredibly arrogant, full of kfira, but arrogance, and, you know, they believe that they are Reish Verishin. Then you have the leftists, and, you know, who marched into Oslo, you know, with their 51% majority and did what they want. Totally. Now you have the right, and the right wants to abolish the Supreme Court, the power of the Supreme Court and the settlers, etc. All of them, there's enough guilt to go around here, enough machlekes to go around on all of them. And what's the solution? They can destroy Eretz Yisrael, the wokeism, only my opinion counts. Or what do? Put them in a room and you say, I want you to negotiate some type of an agreement that you're going to know it's the right agreement if every one of you walks out of here unhappy. That means everybody compromised, because that's what adults do. Now, I'm not talking about compromising that now you have to not be a Shema Shabbos, etc., that thing go to Ikre Hadas, but whether the Supreme Court rules, how many settlements there should be, etc., etc., these are all things that they can be compromised. So we have two options when we have a machlekes. We could have the other person is a kaifa, he's a reform rabbi, he's if you're a wokist, he's, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Or we can say, you know what, let's sit around a table and respect the other person, even if you disagree with their opinion. It doesn't have to be an ad hominem attack. So I took this young man's voicemail and used it sort of to say, I think it's very relevant, his wokism, to the generation we live in today. Before we go to our guests, I want to say the Dvar Torah on the Yom Tov that we're going on, Purim. And what do we say? Zachar es asher asa lecha Amalek. Remember Amalek. And then it says, Emche ezecha Amalek mitachas hashamayim. I will erase the memory of Amalek. So here's a question. If the goal is to erase the memory of Amalek, then why do we remember Amalek? It certainly seems to be very contradictory. Let me suggest something. Amalek, Reb Chaim already said, we don't know who they are, they're gone. But Amalek, every generation has its own Amalek. You know who I think the Amalek of today is? I think the Amalek of today is basically the New York Times and the woke generation. And what do they try to do? Gemara says already that Amalek is the koyach of Latsanis, the koyach of Makari. Let's takiu pesiyarim with Amalek, the Gemara Darshan. So a let's is Amalek. Zerkin arloiseyim klape maila. What is Makari? If you look at today's Times, and when I say the Times, I mean both the paper and the Times, what do they celebrate? LGBTQ. What is LGBTQ? Why? It's like a god by them. They talk about it more than anything. Because if LGBTQ is sort of our Rosh Hashanah, that's our mantra, that's really the destruction of family. Family means a husband, a wife, children. LGBTQ means Yimafkia, the whole Koyach HaLada. So there is no fear. There is no more family. We know the Yisoid of the Torah is basically the Yisoid of character, of Kal Yisrael, the first mitzvah given to Kal Yisrael, Selabe Save Selabayis, is family. They have now in New York no bail. There was a woman, she was arrested for the 100th time, you can Google this, for shoplifting. Every time she goes to court, there's a rule now, no bail for if it's a misdemeanor. It's not a violent crime. Even for violent crimes now, they have no bail. What does no bail mean for any type of property damage? That means all work is valueless. You can own a store, there's no more property values. You can work, or you can just shoplift, and they can't do anything to you. So another ichor of society, the concept of hard work, that's what no bail stands for. The endless attack upon the Jews of the Hasidim, to attack on religion, what does that stand for? When they attack the Jews, they're really attacking religion. When they attack Israel, they're only talking about attacking Jewish values. The concept of transsexuality, what does that mean? It's an attack on the Tzuras Adam. So all these wokeisms is basically, it's a litzonis of every value that we have and the illusion that there is some other value. They don't define it. What type of values can you have if you mock work, you mock marriage, you mock family, you mock religion? What values can you really have? There's some illusion out there of some other value. You know, Rav Leib Chassman, I've said this over before, but it's such a wonderful story. He said that there was once this hick, and there, you know, in early 1900s, he came to a big city. He had never seen a city before, and he was spoiled from the things he saw. Amazing, he went to stores, and one thing he sees is a box with a battery in it, a cylindrical object in it. And he says, what is it? He says, oh, it's a light. It's a searchlight. They turn it on. It's this huge light. He says, wow, they didn't have electricity in his village. I'll buy one. He had to run back to his caravan, was taking him back to the village. And on the way, he sees there's a big building and there's a long line of people to get into it. He says, what is this? It's a movie theater. He says, can I buy? Yeah. He goes in and it's a movie. It's a silent movie back from those early 20s. There's a king and a queen and a prince and a princess and a bad guy. And the princess had to run and she's hiding behind the rock and the prince is looking for her, but he can't see her because she's hidden. So this guy jumps up and he starts screaming, look, she's behind the rock. And he doesn't hear. See, he says, I'm going to show. He pulls out his searchlight. He turns it on. The whole place turns light. He can't see the screen anymore. Everybody starts shouting at him, shut the light. Over here, you only see when it's dark. You only see when the lights are off. So Rav Leib used to say, this is about, you know, the movie screen. You turn on the lights and it's gone because it's an illusion. Some things, they're really illusions. You shine a light on them and they disappear. You know, that's the thing about illusions. They live in our mind. A fellow told me, I get calls a lot of times from people. They want to talk to somebody they think is more open-minded. This guy calls me up. He said he went to Vegas and he had a Chalishas Hadas. He said he saw so many beautiful people. And, you know, he's married, he said, for 20 years. He said he came back as I shook up. A guy came from a sheltered society. He says, how do I deal? It's like it shook up my love to my wife. He says, I saw such people dress. And I said to him, I said, you know, did you ever buy when you were a kid, you know, if you bought Fruity Pebbles or one of these things, it would have like a picture of this very exciting looking toy. And it said that if you bought 3 box tops, because they wanted your mother to buy more boxes of the stuff, and you sent it in, you could get it, or 4 box tops. You told your mom, buy another box of Fruity Pebbles. You save them, you excitedly, you would take it and stick it in the envelope and put a stamp on, and 2 weeks later, it would come back from them. And that laser gun from the box that was shooting people, you opened it up, and you saw, what was it? It was a piece of plastic garbage. You pressed it twice, and it stopped clicking. It fell apart. I said, that's what these shiny illusions are. I said, all those, you know, those beautiful images you saw, think of that shiny laser gun from the box top. There's no value there. Turn the light on it and it disappears. So what does it say? It says about Amalek and its Makari, Zohar. And then it says Emche Zecher. Well, if it's shine a light on it, how are you going to erase the Zechira? And the answer is, a lot of the illusions in our lives that think of whatever, you know, illusion you have, whatever fantasy it is. What does it say? Shine a light on it. Just like Reb Leib Hasman in the movie theater. More likely than not, you really analyze it and it disappears. There's really nothing there. It's the laser gun that came in the box top from Fruity Pebbles. That's what we say about Amalek. Amalek today is the litzanis that's being poured on us. And Zachar means, let's analyze them. Let's talk about them. Let's speak about how foolish they really are and how little happiness there really is among them. Zachar is Asher Aslam Amalek. That's the modern Amalek. I would like to say one more short vart. It's my favorite vart that I heard from Rav Futman Zachar Nelev Racham Purim. He spoke about the Adala Yada. He said there were once two friends from Yeshiva, and they hadn't seen each other in maybe 20, maybe 30 years. One got a rabbanus, one place, one worked in one city, one in another city. One was a shliach in Australia, one was a shliach in Yukon. And they came once to a kretschmer. They once met at an inn, and they saw each other. And one said, Chatzkel, Moshe. And they started hugging, and they started talking. Where have you been the last 30 years? Tell me about your family, your children. Suddenly the Balagola comes over and he says, Anshuldix, you know, we have to leave. He said, but we haven't seen each other. He says, I'm sorry, you know, time to go. So one of them has an idea. He says to the Balagola, listen, I know you like to drink. Go to the bar. Have a Macallan 18 on me. Yeah, here's my, I'll pay for it. So he says, really? A Macallan 18? That's an expensive. Yeah. He goes, he makes it a high end. They speak for another 15 minutes. The guy comes back. He says, that was great. Time to go. He says, would you like another? He says, Macallan 18, that's a fortune, yeah. He says, okay, pay for another. Comes back another, this time it's 20 minutes later. He comes back a third time, he says, okay, now it's time to go. He's a little slurry. He says, this time, Macallan 25. Yeah. He goes, has the third glass of schnapps, he falls down, falls asleep. And the two friends spend the entire night catching up and talking. So Futman said, you know, the neshama and the Rabbi Nishalem, we're old friends. Right, we were old friends. What happened? The guf, the body came along. Well, one day a year, we say to the body, have a l'chaim, have another l'chaim, have another l'chaim. I want to get together with my old friend, spend as much time as I can, just like old times, amol amol. And that's what we do in Purim. L'chaim, l'chaim. And now for the riddles of the week. Here's the first one. We make a Shechiyanu Balayla, and then we make another Shechiyanu Bayoim, by the Megillah. And if you go to a most shuls, they give a clap. Everybody should have Kavana by the day, Shechiyanu, to have Kavana for the Mitzvah Sayoim, Mishlach Mane, Sudas Purim, etc., that this Shechiyanu should go on them. And everybody should have Kavana. So the Bir Halacha says that the Prima Gadim says that you should actually have Kavana by night, by the Shechiyanu, because that Shechiyanu also goes on the Mitzvahs Hayayim and the Sudas Hayayim. What is the great Prima Gadim saying? And Prima Gadim is basically, I think, saying like this. We know by Sukkah, the halacha is, that if you made a bracha on building the Sukkah, it's Samach V'Nira. You don't make a bracha of Shechiyanu when you go into the Sukkah, because the bracha of building it would work for the bracha of the Sukkah, of the first night. That's the halacha. If you made a Shulchan Aruch Paskins, you made a bracha when you built a sukkah, you don't make it anymore when you enter the sukkah the first night. That Shechiyanu is some of, it's close enough, it's chal on the sukkah itself too. So the Prima Gadim says, you make a Shechiyanu at night on the Megillah, that Shechiyanu could work for the Sudas Hayyim and for the Mishloach Manis and Atanas Lev Yainim. And let me be Maisif on this. Why, indeed, do we make two Shechiyanus? Why don't we say that the Shechiyanu that we make at night should help for the Mikra Megillah of the Yom too, just like the Shechiyanu that we make Erev Sukkah, so if you make it on the Binyan HaSukkah, works for the Sukkah too? So we're asking, A, why does it not work for the Kriyas Megillah itself, Bayom? That's our first riddle. Our second riddle is, at the end of the Megillah, Bayoyim Ahu Nosan Hamelach HaChashverish Esther Amalka is Beis Haman. She gave Beis Haman to Esther Amalka. If you look in Chumash, Rashi says, Timche Zecher Amalek, Rashi in Chaf Heyutes, Me Ish Vad Isha, Me Oilol Vad Yoinik, Me Shor Vad Seh. That what? Just like by Shmuel, Shelo Yehei Shem Amalek Nisker Afilu Abehema. Right? All the money of Amalek should be gone. Dissipate. Right, what happened to Shmuel? He said, should have killed, wipe out everything. That's why Shaul was killed. And by the way, Bayoyim Ahu Nosan HaMelech HaChashverish LeEstra HaMalka is Beis Haman. Right? Lest you're going to answer, well, maybe it means Beis Haman. It means to destroy Beis Haman. It doesn't mean to keep Beis Haman. If you look in the Moisef Rashi of it, Rashi says, that brings the Pasuk, Choyte eini manchil ki tzofein cheloi. Rashi says, the money of the Rasha ends up in the Tzaddik's hands. That's what means it's Beis Haman. So it was clearly for Esther Malka to enjoy it. How could Esther Malka enjoy it when Rashi himself says in Chumash, in Dvarim and Chaf Heyotes, Timche Zeich Ramalek means all the money should be gone, like we see by Shaul HaMelech. So you have a stira from Rashi, of the Pasuk, and the way Rashi says, the way he learns in the Maisef Rashi, he goes on the money to the Rashi in Chumash that says that the money of Amalek should be destroyed. That is our second riddle of the week. Before we go to our guests, I would like to give a brief hagdama to this topic on should the Medina be al pi halacha. This shaila really happened when the establishment after the Balfour Declaration, the Gedolei Hador kacht about it. Reb Chaim Eiser, and we published all these Maram HaKaimis, we put them on the online. Chaim Eiser wrote that Avada, everything has to be al pi dinei Torah, in a letter to Rabbi Dushinsky from the Eda. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank wrote it, lo yitochen medina Yehudis, that should be shaloi al pi halacha. Right, the Tzitz Eliezer wrote a whole sefer about it. In the Igros HaChazeinish, he talks about how the Medina, that has to be halachically. Here's the Lashon of Rabbi Zalman Meltzer. Gam daiti, right, he talks about the in Marine Bad after the Balfour Declaration. Be'inyin Medinas HaYehudim im teitze lepoyel, yishtadlu yachad rabbis ge'oinei Yisrael amroish aguda, shanhogas ha-medina ti al-pi ha-toyrak doisha, haksuva v'amaseira. If we have Eretz Yisrael, it has to be al-pi halacha. You all agreed, Bepechad, that if you had a Medina, it has to be Al-Pi Halacha. Now the question is, how do you run a country Al-Pi Halacha? We asked the question, what are you going to do? Guy steals something, he's going to say, you don't have to aid them, I'm sorry. All you have is video evidence, you have two women, you have a child, you know, you don't have Hasra. How many Ganavim have Hasra before they steal something? Do not steal, did you hear? Do not, three times Hasra. Reb Chaim Eiser already writes about this, and he brings from a Drushes Haran, he says that there's two ways to run a country. There's one Alpi Bezdin, but there's another that's Alpi Melech. And Melech b'mishpat yamid aretz, that a king has the right, the autonomy, to do what he needs to run a country. So he writes, if you would run Eretz Yisrael Alpi Halacha, he says there would be Halacha, but there would also be super Halacha, because the Chachamim today would have the din of Melech to enforce the rules of a country that you would need to be just for practical Melech b'mishpat yamid aretz, that there shouldn't be anarchy. So he says, so in other words, in halacha, Reb Chaim Eiser writes, there is sort of super halacha that allows you to override Chayshin Mishpat and say, here we have to make rules that go beyond Chayshin Mishpat. And the Rajba in Shin Peches, Muva Batur, says a very similar thing, okay, but besides the Drashas Haran. That is the first opinion. Now, Rav Herzog wrote a later letter. He was the chief rabbi, ultimately, of Eretz Yisrael. And I have an affinity of him. He's the one who rediscovered Tchelis. But he adds on to this. He says, and of course, he says, since we live among the Umay Sa'ilam, and we couldn't survive if we had their enmity, so he says things like, you know, a goy not owning land in Eretz Yisrael, he says, al darkei shalom, there would be many other rules. So this is sort of one, two ways to go. Now there's another mahalach in the Paiskim, a very interesting mahalach, and that's based upon the Shulchan Aruch in Chayshim Mishpat Simen Beis. The Ramah brings a concept that Toivei Ha'ir, what does that mean? Basically, you know, in many cities in Europe, the Jews basically were the majority of the city of many of these shtetlach. And what did they do? They didn't run with the rules of necessarily the Polish or the Russian government, but they would have sort of the Toivei Ir would make takonis that how the Ir should run. And the Ramah discusses it in Simon Bays. So he says, so that the concept is if you live here, you have to listen to the Toivei Ir. So basically it's the concept of democracy. What we have in America today, the Ramah discovered around 500 years ago. So you say, this is not sort of that. Well, it's related to the Melech B'mishpat Yamid Aretz, even though the Ramah does not bring it. He just says, if you live here, you're obviously agreeing to the Das HaRabim. And these Rabim have elected officials, and these officials, you're living here based upon acquiescing to their rules. So these are sort of the two or three Mahalchim. We're going to discuss it with Rabbi Tahan and a little bit with Rabbi Krengel. Should make for really fascinating shir. If you want to leave a message by phone or dial in by phone to listen, in America our number is 732-806-8700. In England it's 44, that's the country code, 33011 70250. In Eretz Yisrael, it's 02-372-0304. Let's go to our fabulous shiur.
Joining us from Brooklyn is Harav Shai Tahan. He's a renowned Paisik and lecturer. He's the Reish Kol of Shari Ezra. He's Dav Bezdin of Arze Halvonin. He's Talmud of Yeshiva Smir, a Musmach of Rav Belsky, Rav Shul Birnbaum, and many others. Welcome, Reb Shai.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
So, Reb Shai, if there were to be a Fruma government, because 51% Rav of Eretz Yisrael was from, right, would we have to lead the country of Israel, we have to be running it al pi halacha? There is the Av Bezdin, the new Supreme Court justice would be, you know, Rabbi Yashiv, or you know, Zechariah Levracha, pick your favorite, you know, Av Bezdin, and the all the halachas, Gneva, Gzela, Ritzicha, etc., would have to go al pi din Torah. What do you say about that?
Okay, so this was a machloikus already of Gdolei Israel in the beginning of this, when the state of Israel was established, and before establishing the state, Gdolei Israel already argued with that, whether the country should run al pi das Torah completely, or things that's nogea, establishments that it's really not smooth to run, like Dine Kefel for Gzela, for Gneva, or somebody that steals, they only has to return the Gneva, which it doesn't have much to lose. You steal and you get caught, so you give it back and there's no punishment for it. But you can't really have a society running on just strict halachas of what the Torah says, and that's something that they argued whether it should be strictly al pi halacha, and that's how, for instance, Rav Yosef Chaim Zonfeld was very much pushing for, and Rav Yisrael Zalman Meltzer wrote like this. There was even a sefer that was written back then in the name of Yesoidus Lechuka, the Medina Yehudis, that was written by Rav Moshe Bloy in the request of Ephraim Meiser. He was the manig, he was the head of the Agudas Yisrael, and they held like this very stark. It should be exactly like the Intera. Even the Intera.
So wait, let me, a lot of information. First of all, do you think there's anybody who wants to do that today?
I don't think so, because there's double problem here. One is many things that's written in the Torah can't be practiced today because of Umos HaOlam. If you can't have, for instance, go to certain places in Yerushalayim, or you can't sell a house to a goy in Eretz Yisrael, which is a din Torah, so we know how dangerous it is today, time and age, where things go around in seconds and the whole world speaks about it. So there are those, like Yitzhak Herzog, Zatzal, that held that this is partial, that you can't apply either with Mishum Pikuach Nefesh, because this is Mamash Takanas Nefesh to do such a thing, just like we found, for instance, that you're allowed to save a goy on Shabbos, although we're doing a Chilul Shabbos, not like the Chafetz Chaim. This is how Rav Moshe wrote, this is how Chacham Avadia wrote, this is how Rav Shlomo Zalman wrote, even though we're Mechalel Shabbos when we see such a thing. A Tala comes and there's a goy over there. They have to be Mechalel Shabbos. Why? Because it's a Kanas Nefashis. If you don't, you have to do it. Same thing here. So there was a conflict how to take this. There were those that were pushing everything should be al pi halacha. Those that were a little bit in the middle, which means some things you can apply it in Torah, and some things you have to do what you says in Shulchan Aruch, in Cheshen Mishpat Siman Bey, that you have to apply things of that whenever I'm prutzim, so ba'averis, so it's like a tzorech shah, so you can do things shelo al pi das Torah, shelo al pi din Torah, as it's brought down in the Gemara, makiv ha'oinshin shelo min ha'din, lo lavor al divrei Torah, ela lasos siag l'Torah. This is the Gemara in Sanhedrin Mem Vav.
So wait, so Rav Tan, so again, let me unpack what you said. Clearly, we're, it's negeya to umayis ha'olam, like you said over, like Ramesh is talking about a doctor. So then alt eva, it has a din of pikuach nefesh, and you would allow to do that, like when it came towards a guy buying land in Eretz Yisrael, being mechal Shabbos for him, etc. But now, let's take goyim out of the picture, where it's not eva, there's no chal Shabbos. Let's talk about where it's Jews. The gedolim you mentioned, I think you said Rabbi Zalman and Rav Bloy, etc., would they hold that today it should be totally for Jews, al pi Torah?
Well, even if you applied in Torah, some things you have to apply to halachas that I mentioned from human base, that the poskim, this is clear pashut halacha that the Rashba brings down, and I mean, it's halacha shofanahu, but the Rashba brings down that if you don't apply this, haya oilam chorev, he says, nimta oilam chorev, because you need for everything edim vasra. A person does, a person murders, a person robs, a person does other crimes. You can't apply it unless there's edim vasra. He has to be mekabel on himself, the oinish. It's just not practical.
I agree with that. But the question is, did the gedolim of the prior generations, like Rabbi Chaim Moshe and Rabbi Zalman, did they agree with that?
Absolutely. The I think the word is what the Chazon Ish wrote very, very nicely. He said that the halachos in the Torah, those halachos are considered the din. This is the law. And then the Zayrech Shah, as long as you don't apply it as a law, but that's the way you practice it, that's definitely, that's the way it should be applied. So therefore, you have to form it in a certain way that if a person, let's say, murders Lo Aleinu, so he gets the, either capital punishment or whatever, or goes to jail for many, many years, but it shouldn't be like a din. But you have to form it in a way that this should be the punishment without being the din. If there's such a way, if there's such a...
So how would you do that?
Well, I guess if, just like the Rambam writes, that all the Rabbonons are not, he asks, why is it loitzaisif, when Chachamim did whatever they all the Gzeirot of the Takonis? He says, because they, whenever they said that, in Ilchos Mamrim he says, whenever they said that only... they imply that it's only the Rabban. They said it's only the Rabban. When you don't say that it's in Din Torah, then it's fine. Over here also, you say that this is the way we practice things. It's not halacha. It's not. It's the way we practice things. It gives it a little bit less importance. But once you have a
So you're saying that when it comes to genevis, ritzicha, gzela, things like sexual crimes, etc., it pretty much wouldn't change from the way it is today.
Yes, I don't know if it wouldn't change. Al pi din Torah, it should be applied heavier. A person that's rotzeach can't go to jail. He should get the capital punishment. A person that does aveiros that are equal to
so
that.
So would you say then that there would be capital punishment today for tzichas?
They're trying to right now make such establish such a law in Eretz Yisrael for
so there, so would it be sayet? Would they cut off the head with a sword? Let's say, would there be skila today?
I don't know if there would be skila, but definitely it would cause people to think twice before they do whatever they do, and definitely it would be something that would make it cause deterrence, and definitely would make the place.
Let me ask you something. Would they be able to, let's say, have an electric chair, even though for that aveira the Torah would require one of the Dalad Mises Bezdin? And would that be negative for Torah?
So I want to tell you, the Gemara says such a thing. There is a Gemara in Sanhedrin Mem Hei Amud Beis that says that. Right, like I've been in Nashim, that of Shimon ben Shatach, Dalash, Moine Nashim Bashkin. That's not the din. You don't hang people. What is that? He says, the Gemara says that you have to do it to cause deterrence. It's Shalol Avaral Das Teira, Lelas Asag La Teira. You have to do whatever you have to do.
I understand, but you do have the concept of Chenek in the Teira. You don't have the concept of an electric chair.
I don't know if that was the... The Gemara says you can do whatever's needed. Halacha in Shulchan Aruch says whatever's needed. You can do whatever's needed, not only the punishments of the Torah. The Gemara says that you could, for example, The Gemara says, the Poskim say you could put them in people in jail. The Gemara says,
I understand that. The Gemara says that they would put them in jail. But here's the question. There is no punishment of jail in the Torah, right? So when you're putting somebody in jail, you're not going negative or a Torah. You're just being a different punishment from the Torah. Right? It's sort of like the halacha of Dina de Malchusa. Dina de Malchusa says we can't have Dina de Malchusa that's negative or a Torah, but where the Torah is silent about something, then you could do Dina de Malchusa. So if the Torah is Mechayev, let's say, Skila, and you would say do it through the electric chair, would that be problematic because there is a required derech of killing on such an Avera?
I understand the difference, but as I said, that Gemara that gives you the right to makiv v'ayinshim shelo min hadin gives you different examples of the way to punish, even though that's not the punishment that's written in the Torah. So I hear what you're saying. Maybe there is a chenek, but hanging women. It seems like he hung them alive. There's no such thing. And the Gemara gives that you can do whatever you want to a person for Letzorich Shah in order to have the Takanas established.
So society would basically function the same way as today?
More or less. I would think that Taylor would rather go stricter punishments on things, although for Gneva it's not that way. But this man she'am putim ba'averus, the halacha permits to kill such a person. It's the very beginning of Shulchan Aruch.
So would you kill Ganavim then? Like Rabbi Shimon ben
Shimon? Not necessarily, but that's where you have to have Gedolei Torah sitting down and seeing that if for deterrence that is needed to be done, can zayin. If it's something that's going to cause stop crime, Gneva is not such a heavy crime. But there are crimes that are heavy crimes that the Torah doesn't punish for it. As you mentioned, playing with kids, the Torah doesn't mention such things. Although there is a law in Eben Ezer and Mesachim in the Miotik Naikus, but I think today they would apply it much heavier than the Taylor would be too, and as the law is today, very, very strict.
Okay. What about on Shabbos, what would they do? You know, what would you do with electricity on Shabbos if Jews are running the country? How would you do something like that?
Right. So there's definitely much talk in the Pesachim, for instance, Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, and other farm as well, of how to run the government on Shabbos. Definitely things that are needed for Pikuach Nefesh are permitted to be done. There's no question about it. So army and police, force, whatever's needed, and whatever you could do through a goy, like for instance, electricity. Today, everything is automatic, but if you need somebody behind the scene, electricity also is no gap Pikuach Nefesh for hospitals and things like that. But if you could have a goy sitting behind and working out all these things, of course, that's the preferable way to run the country. Have the entire place that's not needed for pikuach nefesh run by goyim.
So in short, if the country were to go, you know, majority from, basically the courts would be replaced by from a court. Is that how you see it?
That's definitely the correct thing to do, but I don't know if things would be very different than what we're talking, than the way things are happening right now, with some adjustments.
Well, Choshe Mishpat would be very different, wouldn't it?
I'm not sure. Choshe Mishpat, what's Nogia, Ben Adam Lechaveiro, Dine Shcheinim, but there's a concept that the Rashba writes, and that all the halachas in Choshe Mishpat, or most of the halachas in Choshe Mishpat, are nogea to minhag ha'olam. So whenever a person comes with a question on Choshe Mishpat, the very first question you need to know is what's the minhag? If a person sold something and there's a tenant that has an issue with the landlord. So he says like this, he says like that. If you didn't write down or speak out beforehand and everything was very clear. So you need to know what's minhag ha'olam. So here also, if things are running already in a certain way, that has also base and establishment in halacha. It's already nikba in such a way. It's not necessarily going to change much in halacha. So, for instance, kinyanim. Kinyanim, we know in the Torah there's kinyan, but there's also kinyan situmka. So the way things are running already in the system, they continue that way, even if you change the court system to a beis din.
Give you a simple example. A sha'ila b'baylavimai. There's no concept of baylavimai by in American court system, right, or an Israeli court system. Halacha there is.
Right.
Would you go with the chiddush of the Torah? Would you go with the Israeli court system?
Would you go with the Menag Olam? I think it's a hard question, but I think when you have a din Torah clear like that, and it's something that you can teach the people, you can educate the people that whenever you give something to somebody, there's a din of balafimo. It's not so. It comes into already the practicality, just like ribis. We already are familiar with ribis, so we apply it already to our loans and whatever we do whenever it comes to the concept of tamun.
I mean, if you sent a virus and destroyed all somebody's computer information, that would be tamun, right? I mean, would you go out with halacha? Would you go with minhag olam?
So over here, there will be a chiluk between somebody that was mazik b'shoigeg, although mazik is adam a mazik. If he sends a fire, I'm saying a fire would not have din of adam a mazik, but if he sends a fire, maybe.
But if he sends a virus, it's the same thing as a fire, right?
If he sends a virus and it destroys somebody's information,
it's all tamun.
Right.
It would be pata.
Right. So then if a person did it purposely, so the Paiskim, the Rishonim that's mentioned in Siman Beis, say that you have to be Mechayev. You have, it's not Din Torah. It's the same din that we said that they use the Hefker base in Hefker for that, but you be Mechayev people.
You be Mechayev Taman Be'esh B'mezid would become Chayev?
Not midin Torah, midin from that din that I'm saying that you have to apply the din, otherwise the world will be destroyed. People will do whatever they want, and there's so many gray areas in the Torah that you could do all kind of things and get away with. So that's where you have to close those open cracks with those dinim that they think would apply their power and put their foot down to make sure that it doesn't happen. So a person did it b'mezik, there's a chiluk, b'shoigeg, okay, we'll go with the entire. But if I think that he maybe did it b'mezik, or is very very negligent, you'll have to apply this based in power.
Abshai, thank you very much. That was very enlightening.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye. Joining us from Eretz Yisrael is Rabbi Yisrael Krengel from the Tzomet Institute, formerly a Rav in South Africa. Today he's a lecturer. He gives shiurim in the Gush. Welcome, Rav Krengel.
It's wonderful. Wonderful to be with you.
Could you give us a 30-second what Tzomet does?
Okay, very good, good, good. So Tzomet literally is a Rashi Tevot. The full name is Tzivtei Madava Torah, meaning teams of, but Mada, you know, is officially science, but in this case means engineering. Engineers, they literally have teams of engineers, technicians, but everything is for the sake of the Torah. In other words, Rav Rosen, it's interesting with the parashat of the Mishkan, you know, this is like the modern day Mishkan. How can you take modern technology and use it for the sake of the Torah? The direction was always using the technology to help us with issues in Torah, and specifically in Eretz Yisrael, when you've got a whole country dealing with all the different kind of things, the security, medical, all those kind of things on Shabbat. So that was a major part of his focus, finding solutions for things like that.
So let me ask you, let's go to our question. You know, what's going on in Israel now with the right and the left and the center.
Right.
So now they want to replace the Supreme Court. So it brought to mind the question, let's say Eretz Yisrael would be 51% Orthodox.
Right.
Which, by the way, could happen in the next 50 years, right?
Right.
So would they control it? Now the question is, what would a Medina Dati look like?
Right. It's so interesting, you know, and like Rav Rosen, Zichron Rechav, Rav Yisrael Rosen, his Tzad Machon Tzomit, he himself, the great Talmud Chacham, he learned for many years in Kerem Yavna, and then he did a full electrical engineering degree at Machon Lev. But his whole mantra was, and this is, Machon Tzomit was established in 1976, so we're talking about almost 50 years ago. His whole mantra was what he, and he said it all the time then, Medina Yehudit Api Halacha.
Okay, so now you have a from a country. How do you run a police force on Shabbos? I mean,
right,
you have
right.
police sitting there. I mean, it's going to be
right.
from a policeman. He's
right.
sitting there. Now, there's probably going to be something that's pikuach nefesh, but 99%
right.
is not pikuach
right.
nefesh. 99% is a simple robbery or this or that.
Right.
Are you going to say
right.
that since everything could be? Somebody says, hi, there's a robbery someplace. Well, will you go send a police car there? How do you deal with that?
Right, right. Okay, very good question. So that is something Rav Rosen was involved in. And in fact, he was involved in, I mean, he passed away 5 years ago, so this must be even longer than that. He was involved in the appointing of a Rav, of the Mishtarah. And at Rav Rosen's first Yotzai, the head of the police came to speak about it. Look, they do try, look, once again, in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Rosen's vision was that in Eretz Yisrael, what's amazing is he really took straight from the sugya. You know, there's a sugya in Shabbos Membet that talks about Pikuach Nefesh Derabim. And he said from there, he felt that pretty much all situations in Israel, it's a different picture. You know, whether you're talking about the army or security, you know, we're the ones who did the metal detectors at the Kotel. So that's general security as well, and the police force. And they're working on Shabbat is pretty much that, you know, because the Mishnah Yoma, Gimel says, Safek Nefashot Toche Shabbat, add to that this idea of Bikoch Nefesh Derabim that I'm talking about on the scale of a whole country in a lot of cases. You know, in Israel, if a lot of times something's not dealt with, you never know where it's going to lead to.
Let me elucidate what Rabbi Krangel is saying. There's a Balamor that talks about by a Gachos Prisha Sarabim.
Right. Right.
So right. I just want to. I imagine is what you're talking about. So he
yes,
says you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos even though it's a Derais. It's a Chaykes Rishayin
right.
whether it's a Derais or Drabanan.
Right.
The Baal HaMor says unlike many of the other Rishayin, the Baal HaMor learns you're allowed to take it away or extinguish it on Shabbos even though it would be a Derais. In a case
right.
where it would be a Derais, which is complicated.
Right. right.
And
right.
the Baal HaMor says why, and it's a fascinating start of the Baal HaMor says.
Right.
The Baal
HaMor right.
says it's unlikely that anybody will get damaged. It's only one in a small percent, 1 in 500, 1 in 1,000.
Right,
but when
right.
you have it, when you have a 1 in 1,000 chance, a 1 in 10,000 chance of something happening, and there are 10,000 people there,
right.
then it becomes
right.
100% chance that somebody's going to get critically hurt.
Right, exactly.
And that's what you say. You look at the mass. So therefore, where do we find this concept of the Moshul? The Mishnah Berurah Nibzan. I don't remember if it's in Shin Lamed Tes, but he says that. Let's say there's a strafe in the ear.
So
there's a strafe at Allah, you have to leave your house. You're not allowed to put it out.
Right,
no,
right,
nobody,
right.
But if it's in the city, then you're allowed to put it out. Why?
Right,
so the Mishnah Berurah brings from the Bichadash and others that maybe if it's an ear, there's probably invalids too. So there's some invalid at home
right.
who can't run out of their house.
Right.
And when that person's
right.
house gets, so then it will. So we have to look at all the different possible combinations and computations, and then we say that, oh, in that case, it's a Pikuach Nefesh.
Right, right, right.
Exactly. So Rabbi Rosen is saying the same thing, or Rabbi, in this case, Rabbi Krangel is saying, Rabbi Rosen, the same thing with Gabi, a police force. It's true that 99.99% of robberies, the guy takes something and leaves. But when
right.
you have 1,000 robberies, the robber's going to shoot somebody.
Right.
So for
right.
that reason, you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos. Is that what you're basing it on?
Right. Now, exactly. That was exactly the idea. But still, you know, at the end of the day, even with Pikuach Nefesh, we still paskin the Chuya and not Hotra. That even if we 100% is Pikuach Nefesh, we're still going to try our best to reduce the Chilul Shabbat. And that's really what Rav Rosen was working with. So like in the police force, they will use our Shabbat. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's a pen that disappears, not immediately, like within a day or two. And it was something he conferred with Rav Mordechai Eliyahu at the time that would still be considered Edomit Kayyem.
Siva Drabana. Or for example,
right.
you could use Tesla vehicles, electric cars, which would not be the rice either.
Exactly, and we developed a call for the doctors in Efrat. Today, by the way, with digital systems, it's also easier. You know, our engineers basically feel that touchscreen technology, which is a capacitive sensor, which is basically just modulating a current as opposed to a normal keyboard, is better halachically. Once again, Rav Rosen was very careful.
And there was a sound of sick ratio anymore.
Right, right. He was very clear that the home context, he didn't want to touch. He was very against any, the beauty of the home context is I switch off my phones and my computers and disconnect from technology. But if you're talking about the police, you're talking about the army, you're talking about, like, once again, the security, general security, hospitals, wherever we can, we are trying to introduce systems that would reduce and in some cases even eliminate the Chilul Shabbat.
Explain how Tower Olam, how does it work when you have these delayed circuits? And it's in America, it's Negea too. Where is it, Negea? You have Cholim that they can't go to Shul on Shabbos. So they have now the Shabbos electric scooter.
Yes.
Right. And it has, and it's based on SOMET technology.
Yes,
and the idea being that since it's not a Daraisa, it's only a Drabanan, so for a Chayla, the Shulchan Aruch is Mat, there are certain Drabanans for a Chayla.
Right.
Explain how that works, why it's not a Daraisa. Right.
But that's a very interesting area because it wasn't exactly Pikoch Nefesh, but this already 40-plus years ago, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach himself, right, and his Yotza is coming up, Chaf Adar, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach himself basically commissioned Rav Rosen to work on that specific area, because it's not exactly Pikoch Nefesh, but he felt it's all very nice and well for somebody who can walk, okay, but for, he actually, Rav Orbach father was a din in Onik Shabbat, which is definitely from the pasuk, right? That the Karat Shabbat Oneg from Mishael. But the Poiski in the Mishnah brings the Mishnah Brewer brings it down. It's actually he's referring to the Ritva, but that's even Midoraita. In other words, Oneg Shabbat is a concept Midoraita. Oneg Shabbat, as described in the Sugiyot, is the food. And but the greatness of Rav Orbach is he found somebody who's gotten used to an electric scooter to the week, and now comes Shabbos, it's going to literally ruin his Oneg Shabbat. He was willing to do it. But it's a combination of two different solutions he created. The first one is Grama, as you mentioned. And by the way, the company in America, Amigo, works with us. You know, we have a partnership with them. It turns with Grama. So Grama, is a classic concept in Shabbos, Kuf Chaf. Now, the classic case where there's a fire and you bring the pots around the fire, so it's indirect causation. So Rav Rosen took straight from that Mishnah and developed a classic grammar switch. It's basically a microprocessor, which the whole Shabbat is checking the position of the switch. When you switch it on, it then checks once, and only after second check, then it closes the circuit. So it's a direct translation from the Mishnah into a technologically instituted grammar. But once again, Rav Rosen, by the way, also, he would point out the Ramah, when that's brought down in the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah would say, Makom has said, grammar is only allowed in situations of need. I don't know if you remember that whole kosher switch thing, what was it, 7 years ago or something? Rav Rosen was very against it. He said, in the home context, we don't use grammar. But it's security medical for sure. But the Chiddush of Rav Orbach, he was willing to have an electric scooter turned on with grammar, turned off with grammar. But the whole ride, it's designed that it's only modulating an existing current, which is even a better solution. Because you're not turning on, you're not turning off. You're just literally extending, you're just literally modulating an existing current.
I don't understand how. Explain again how that works. I didn't understand why it's a grammar.
Okay, good. No, you're 100% correct. Because, by the way, I am inviting all your listeners, and I hear there are many, to come and visit the summit. We have a proper visitor center, and it's very beautifully designed. You know, and I have a whole display, and it's got a whole thing, and it explains it. But I'll try and explain once again. By the way, I'm not an engineer. I was from the halachic side, and I had to learn. What Rav Rosen did is he took a very interesting engineering tool called a microprocessor. It's like a little computer that would sit inside the switch. You can even buy it like an outlet, so it'd be a grammar outlet. And let's say a little kid with asthma, and you need to turn on the nebulizer for him. You know, that's one of the things we have on display there. So you want to turn it on. So you just
plug in whatever you want to plug in the hospitals, they're plugged in that way. And on the scooters, it's built in that way. And even, let's say, the chair lifts, it works that way. In other words, it's a built-in switch that inside the switch, there's this little microprocessor that every couple of seconds, he's checking the position of the switch, whether it's on or off, the whole Shabbat. I like to say somebody is working the whole time. Every couple of seconds, Mr. Microprocessor is checking the position of the switch. Then, when you turn on, nothing happens. That's the point. And it's not even a domino effect. Rav Rosenfeld, the domino effect would not be grammar. That would be garmi. Let me go back to the figures in the Zikin. That would be direct causation. He didn't want a domino effect. He wanted a proper grammar, which meant, now that I've turned on the switch, the microprocessor will check once, and still nothing happens. But after the second check of the microprocessor, which normally literally takes a couple of seconds, in other words, it's a recognizable delay. If you've ever seen these scooters, And you'll see, the person will turn it on, it'll literally take 6 or 7 seconds before it starts. And you often have like a little light, and you'll see it checks once, and by the second check you hear this like click, and it starts. And then what's amazing about the grammar switch, it works when you want to switch off as well. Because once you switch off something, it'll still, the microprocessor checks once, it'll check a second time, and then only switch off. In other words...
So I have a question for you, Rabbi Krengel.
Yes.
If the concept is when you turn on the switch, nothing happens.
Yes.
Subsequent to that, there is some device that's doing a query that's checking the switch, and if
exactly.
It sees the switch is on, then it flicks on. So
exactly.
you're saying that's a grumma because it's not immediate. It's not you're connecting two circuits. You're
right.
Doing something, and subsequent to that, something's coming along, right?
Exactly.
Now,
exactly.
So my question is. And that you're saying is similar to the case of the Gemara he's talking about, Rav Kochav says that if there's a fire, you're not allowed to put
right.
water on the fire.
Right.
But
right.
you could put, let's say, big giant balloons or other vessels filled with water around it. And when
right.
the water comes there, it explodes the balloon, let's say, and the water comes rushing out. And then, so you're just putting it there. What happens then
right.
is subsequent, right?
Right.
So then why does he have to have it a 6-second delay? Why can't it be a microsecond delay? Because
well,
it's not immediate. Why do you need both portions of it?
Right, Rabbi.
Explain that to the
audience. Yeah, yeah, that's a fabulous question. You're getting into this like
Talmud
mindset,
no,
yeah. Basically, I think what Rav Rosen wanted to see is he did want it to be something that people can recognize. Because you're right, theoretically, you could have the microprocessor checking quicker, you know. But he wanted it to be something that the person using it and the people around him can see that there is, in fact, a delay. And the idea of the two checks is also, you know, to give you that, because if it's only one check, it could be as you turn the switch, it could be more direct that way. You understand? He wanted it to be a clear, recognizable delay. Now, on the flip side, and this is part of the complexity here, that if it's emergency medicine, if it's talking about Hatzalah, or emergency security situation, those extra few seconds are not good, so then you don't use the grammar. You know what I'm saying? It's it works in both ways.
For the record, I would imagine, and I'm not sitting in the sugya of grammar now, which is a very complex sugya.
Yes, yes, and
but,
a different opinion.
But the different opinions, if there are different opinions, I would imagine that one of the problems that Rabbi Rosen would have is the rush in Baba Kama and the rush in two other areas that says Lamashal
right.
that Shemen Hamatafteis, that if it's seen as one kli, if it's seen as one connected process, it's not considered a grum anymore.
Exactly.
So since over here the switch and the microprocessor are built into one vehicle, be it, so organism,
right.
it could be seen that it's not a grumma as opposed to, let's say, putting balloons around the fire, and when the flame hits them, the balloon bursts. It's clearly two different things that are happening.
Stages, right,
yeah.
exactly.
I imagine that's probably an issue
yeah.
with what Rabbi Rosen is doing.
It is.
Which makes you wonder whether it makes sense to turn on the switch kalachayad.
Right, right. And I think you can, you know. But I'll tell you what the thing is, going back to your original questions. When you're dealing with big systems, once again, in Eretz Yisrael, the hospitals, and most of the hospitals, by the way, use these. They use those switches to call the nurse. Taking into account that in Eretz Yisrael, most of your staff are Jewish, and for the patient to call the nurse, and then for the nurse to come and indicate that she's arrived, she also has a button. It's a grammar switch. And the hospitals know that if it's not that, the person might hesitate. You understand what I'm saying? So it is something that
that can be used. Once again, not in home use. What is also very interesting is more and more Rav Rosen has and Machon Somed in general has managed to upgrade from grammar because, like you say, of the different opinions of grammar, and move more onto, like I said, if you're just modulating an existing current, or even automation. You know, automation is going to be the best solution if you have things that are totally automated in a hospital setting or once again security. Then that's going to be a better solution than grammar.
Right. So the takeaway is, Margaret Krangle, is that through grammar, a lot of, police force, police force or army, you say, is a pikuach nefesh derabim. But running hospitals, et cetera, there's a lot that can be accomplished where it turns it into a grammar, which would be permissible, like many opinions.
Right.
And that would be a way around it without coming on to some of the other opinions that we'll discuss later with some of our other guests, such as the Ran or the Rajba, et cetera.
Like I said, it's something I've been thinking a lot about recently, and I think what's nice, I'll be honest, like what I've learned from what I did, and I was lucky to learn directly from Rav Rosen, was you can bring these things in, like I say, in the hospital security, like I say, we're the ones who do the metal detectors at the hotel, and it's done in we're not coercing anyone, and it's not turning it into a fight. You know what I'm saying?
Is it accepted? Are the metal detectors by the Kaisel accepted by the Haredim, by the right wing?
I think it is. Like, I think most, look, the security guards are profiling more than anything else. And if they'll see somebody and you say, I don't want to go through, and they'll let you most probably. But I'll tell you, more and more things are becoming, and there's a big sign, and people are aware of it, and they're aware it's a security thing, and it has to be safe. We also worked on the ones in Marat HaMachpelah. You know, it's the places that people know it has to be safe, and they're happy with it.
Security by the Kotel is also done through grammar?
That is not, because because grammar is the many different opinions. The metal detectors at the Kotel are Shinu Zerim, are just modulating existing current. First of all, they deactivate the sound and the lights that you would have on during the week, which is why a lot of people think they're off, but they can't be off. They need to keep the place safe. That's the whole point. You know, we have to keep everything safe. So what it is the pillars of the metal detector are creating a magnetic field, and they make sure it stays on the whole time, the whole Shabbos. By the way, Yontif Shani, they keep it on the Shabbos mode. People should know this. And then there's a dial, and the guards are trained. Once again, they're profiling. They're looking at the person walking through the metal detector, but they're also keeping an eye on the dial. And when the dial goes into the red, that means it's too much metal, and they can check. So it's a better solution. It's Shinu Zerim. It's just modulating an existing current. You're not opening or closing anything. And the ones in Marat HaMechpelah also work on that. You can also get handheld metal detectors that work like that. So, and I think on the whole, most people today, these are becoming more of an awareness and more of an understanding. There's, once again, we have this balance of wanting to keep the places safe, but as much as possible, reducing the Chilul Shabbat.
And Shinui Zerim is much more kill, even according to Rav Shlomo Zalman, than turning on a switch. Yes.
Yes. If you look in the letters, you know, because Rav Shlomo Zalman wrote different books, and there's one of them is a kovetz that he wrote. He Dafka didn't want to publish it because he didn't want to publicly argue against the Chazon Ish, which, you know, but it's clear in that he writes, if it's Shinui Zerim, the whole issue is really the turning, is when you turn on something and you close an electric circuit, okay, that's what the Chazon Ish said Bonne. Obviously, there were other opinions that said Molid. So if you're not, closing the circuit or then opening the circuit, if you've just got something flowing the whole time and your action is just literally modulating the intensity of the current. Now, I'll tell you what the complication is. If it's something we've defined as mav'ir, okay, and that is defined, once again, back in the Gemara of Membet, as gachelet shamatechet, you know, which was the whole thing of the original incandescent lights of Thomas Edison. You know, they were literally metal getting red hot. And there, most opinions hold it is mav'ir.
Yeah,
it's a complicated sugya, but most people held that was turning on. When you turn it on, it was fire. But so if it's an incandescent light, let's say on a dimmer, I have one of those in our visitor center. That's also in a Torah. That's the problem. If it's something I designed as fire, then it's also to modulate because I'm literally turning up and down a fire. So that's why Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach said Mefurish, if we're dealing with something like the metal detectors where there's no fire and I don't have a noise and there's no opening or closing a circuit, the circuit will the whole time. And I'm just modulating by the way, Rav Orbach said Mefurish also not in a home context. Shinui Zerim is not allowed at home. He was very clear about that.
Yeah. Rabbi Krangle, thank you very much for your time. This was fascinating.
Pleasure. Okay. And Bezrat Hashem, we'll keep moving forward with all these issues.
Very good.
The pleasure speaking to you.
Take care.
All the best.
Bye-bye.